Hello, my name is Woody. Thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods, a podcast about Deftones. When I was first getting into this band, none of my friends were really into them, so I never had really anyone to talk about them with. But that's changing now. I am extremely fortunate to have made some great friends in my short time as a radio DJ, and equally as fortunate to have had some really great mentors. Pablo is both. In addition to being smart, talented, and good-looking, he's also extremely generous, and I knew he wouldn't say no when I asked him to do this podcast. So please enjoy our chat. I think you'll enjoy listening to Pablo talk about seeing the band in the late 90s, actually DJing at a White Pony promotional event that the radio station hosted, and getting to interact with the band a little bit. Some pretty cool stuff in here that I think, as a Deftones fan, it's easy to get stoked about. Thanks for listening to Change in the House of Pods. Here's my admittedly a little bit tipsy chat with Pablo. So you've been listening to a lot of Koi No Yokan lately.
Yeah, see, first, forgive me, you're talking about Deftones. I thought you said we were doing a podcast about Rolling Stones. I did the wrong research. Yes, man, I've been listening to Koi No Yokan. I love that record. It never leaves the truck, man. I don't know. There's something about Deftones and the emotion that comes with all their music that really is always kind of held a special place in my heart. So I'll never get too far away from listening to a Deftones record ever.
What is it about Koi?
Probably the atmospheric thing, and then back to the emotional thing. You know, the band produces themselves very well. They're well thought. They have a very specific sound, as you know very well. You know, Deftones has got this, Steph's got that in crazy guitar tone, and then, you know, Abe on the drum, and Chino's voice is second to none and very specific and unique. And on that record, you know, it's reminiscent of Pony, where it has, you know, some of those throwback elements of atmospheric emotion heavy that I personally could never really get enough of. So I think that's why it's easy to put it on replay and let it roll, because with every song, there's a different emotion. There's a different thought or feeling that goes through my brain and my heart, with each song. So that's why it's just easy to listen to.
Did you go to?
What about you, by the way? I mean, you obviously you're a day one Jump Street fan of Deftones,
and yeah.
What do you find yourself listening to, like going back to over and over for one of them records?
Well, Ohms just dropped, so I've been listening to that literally nonstop. Like, literally nonstop since Ohms came out. I've been listening to it, like, to the point to where my wife, and the new Drake. I really like the new Drake song.
Yeah,
well,
mix it up, man.
Dude, that song is great. That song is so good. Babe, I love that song. Yeah. But Ohms has been on repeat in the house. Koi is interesting, though, to me, because it is, I never like to rank the albums. Like, that's just really hard for me. Like,
sure.
If I'm feeling one way one day, that's what I'm going to listen to. Or most often I'm just listening to them on shuffle on Spotify. But I really like Koi when I get to hear it live. I think it's the record that I've listened to, or that I've heard live least. I heard Rosemary for the first time at Knotfest, which, as you know, was the first time that I got to interview Chino and Sergio.
Right.
And that's like a 7-minute. That's kind of an adventure. That song takes a while. It's like this down tempo at time. And then it just like to play that at Knotfest, like 7 minutes, and nobody's ever heard it before, mind you, because the record hadn't come out by that point. It was like the new song that they premiered at that performance. And then I counted it, because I got curious after looking at it and sort of like preparing for our conversation here.
Yeah.
Like, what songs that I've heard live from them. And I was looking at Koi in particular, because I really do. I think I've heard at least, I've seen Rosemary like 3 or 4 times. And then in 2016, when they were at Myth, they played Rosemary again, Tempest, and Swerve City, and that was it. Like, that
dude,
was...
Dude, Swerve City, come off swinging. You know what I'm saying? I mean, wow, what a jam. What's that song, like 2 minutes and 45 seconds of just in your face? I love it.
What's,
that record's obviously... it's something you go back to, and it feels timeless to me, and so does Pony. I guess it really, I love going back to the early years too, you know, Around the Fur, and then, you know, Adrenaline too. I was just coming into radio when that stuff was coming out, and as a, you know, just a baby DJ and just trying to figure out that world of rock, and back then, I guess now it's come full circle a little bit, but back then those bands, those 90s, late 90s bands were really accessible. You know, they were just starting out, and they would do anything. You know, they would wash your car to get on the radio, or just to, you know, get their song heard, and people to dig them and to talk about them. And I was fortunate to be around all that stuff from Jump Street, and just be a young kid that was coming into this thing of what is this, you know, and then to see Deftones for the first time. I saw them at X Fest in 98 out in Somerset. And
no shit, you saw them really?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that just opened my eyes. I mean, that was insane. It was a cool lineup too. All the bands on that show were fun, and it, you know, from Brother Kane, kind of weird, you know, Seven Dust, my favorites, of course. Yeah. We had Tool on that show. I think Ozzy kind of hooked up with that tour a little bit, and Deftones was on that show.
Yeah, because it was like Ozfest or something. Or they come around for, because it was like, I was looking at like when they came around and like the shows that might have been viable for me to see. And I didn't see them. I had a hard time figuring out which was my first show. I don't remember for sure.
Sure.
But I know for sure that I didn't go to that, but it was confusing just seeing the dates. So they were at X Fest, and then did they come around again with Ozfest?
Yep, Ozfest, and that was later, about a year later, 99, they came around with Ozfest and played out in Somerset again, but a hell of a show. So I got to see him back to back, and again, you know, being a baby DJ, and I was an impressionable mind, I was soaking up every kind of music and sound that I could get my hands on. You know, it was hard to process because, again, the rock stars back then were accessible. They were super cool. And here I am, this new kid on the block, trying to, you know, figure them out my own way. And, you know, Deftones, one of the first bands that really had a big impression on me in my radio world. And then, you know, Seven Dust, and it just kind of goes on from there. There's a lot of bands back then. There's, you know, Tool took my breath away, and to this day are still my faves. Yeah.
Real quick before, because this is one of the things that I wanted to dig in with you was that time when you came into the radio station. But I wanted to mention, as far as Swerve City goes, it's so weird to me that he's singing about horses. Isn't that weird?
It's not to me.
Isn't that weird?
I think Tino's.
I just always think that's the weirdest shit. But I did hear recently, or he either said it on a podcast, or I read it in one of these articles, because there's been so many like anniversary white Gino pony articles or whatever. So his in-laws like have horses.
Okay.
So, and he like helps out, which is the wildest thing to me to think about, like Chino from Deftones, like this rock, my rock icon, like for the past 20
years.
That's
a guy. Yeah, but that's
like,
guy.
You know, barreling hay and shit. Like, that's weird, right? That's funny.
Yeah,
right?
I think I watched an interview with him recently. So on that tip of what you're saying about him baling hay and hanging out with horses, he was talking about COVID and what his daily routine is. And he talked about getting up and just hang on. And this is how this went. He goes, I get up, I have a cup of coffee because I like coffee. I like to have coffee. And then, well, I put some clothes on. And then I either go for a walk or a run, or I ride the bike. But right now, I'm all about riding a bike. So I ride a bike. I ride a bike, and I live by a lake. So I ride around the lake. And then I come home, and then I get in the shower. And the interviewer's like, what? You're highlighting your days, getting in the shower? He's like, yeah, I just love to take a shower, turn on music, and sing in the shower. It was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So you talking about.
He's unemployed too.
It just seems like right on. Yeah, it seems right on.
He is like everybody else in this country, unemployed and without enough to do.
Truly. But, you know, his musical vibe, where he came from till he hooked up with, you know, Steph and Abe to get their metal background, is so cool. I mean, you're talking about some of the stuff you love and I love, stuff with a beat, hip hop, or just Earth, Wind and Fire and Culture Club. I mean, he was a big fan of Culture Club. I think that was one of the first albums that Chino ever got his hands on, you know? So his influences were all over the place, and just to see how it collides today, their sound, and then evolves with each record is really impressive. It's exciting. You know, I guess as Deftone fans, we get to truly be on the edge of our seat until it drops. And I personally have not been let down, and I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah, I'm the same. I it makes me mad when other people want to shit on an album. Although I will occasionally accept criticism on things that I don't like, but that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because every band has things that you don't like. But when you got into, so when you got into the radio at 93X, it was probably, it was like what, 99, 2000?
97. I started in 97, like December of 97. Then I officially got hired in 98. So I've been around there for a long time.
So you were working the station at those X Fests.
Yeah. That's what I said. That's how I got that access. That's how it was, you know, again, being a baby DJ. The kids that we got working for us now, the young staff, they haven't got to see that world like I got to see it. Mm-hmm. It was because all these bands are now established, you know, whether anyone, pick any band that we're playing. Most of these bands are 15 years deep, 10 years deep, and they've had Korn, you know, all of them. They've all had records out, and you can't get to them. It's a lot harder. And the bands themselves don't want to do meet and greets anymore. They're like, yeah, we've met you guys. We're good, you know, that kind of a thing. Excuse me. But I was fortunate to be at those shows and have my breath taken away, and then to meet those cats backstage. Like, I remember hanging out with Wayne Static at one of those shows and just like the coolest down to earth dude and having some beers and talking about life, or Jacoby Shaddix when he used to be chubby, you know what I mean? All that kind of
dude,
stuff.
Dude. So did you, you had to have been then at the Nutcracker in 2000. It was
of course.
December of 2000. It was Deftones, Incubus, Taproot and Papa Roach played five songs. Papa Roach played five songs that night.
That's right.
I sort of think that was my first Deftones show, but I can't be
Wilkins Auditorium.
Yeah. Dude.
Okay.
So I kind of tell by how you're struggling to recall like the venue, like.
Yeah.
You.
It's. They all kind of blend together, right? I mean, I've got great memories of shows that I went to where I was a little bit more coherent. I went in there with a sober brain. I was excited. And then as life goes on and you get to see these bands so many times, I'm excited to be there, but I don't necessarily need to see Chino scream into the mic or see, you know, everyone, the crowd jump up and down. As long as I'm feeling it and I'm vibing with my friends, and every once in a while I look over and I feel the energy of the room, you know, I'm cool to be in the room like that. And that's the scene I'm okay with now, where when I was younger, I wanted to be in the pit and I wanted to take it all in. And I don't know, I feel like I've been there enough now that I just have an appreciation for being in the room. I
kind of wonder though, like back in 2000,
mm-hmm.
like at that Nutcracker,
mm-hmm.
what do you think you might've been doing at that Nutcracker? Do you think you were in the pit? Do you think you were backstage?
Hammed? I was at both. For me, you know, 2000, that's White Pony. And I'm thinking the show they did prior to being on that Nutcracker show, they came around on their own and they came to the Quest. It was, you know, Prince's Club.
Yeah.
And they came and played there. And we as a radio station did this amazing, amazing promotion with the band, knowing that, you know, their likes as far as music, everyone in the band is very eclectic. So you're going to hear something heavy from Meshuggah, obviously, all the way to the other end of Sade.
So was it like a club night or something?
Yeah, it was like it wasn't a club night, essentially. It was more, they were playing in that, the club, the Quest.
Right.
I used to host a night there for years and years. So I kind of got to be the on-call guy. Plus I owned my own DJ setup, you know, like doing weddings and honey, you know, all that stupid, you know, homecomings and all that stuff. I did some of that stuff for a while. So the radio station hit up the dudes in Deftones and said, hey, we want to do a promotion where we give one winner all the music that you guys love. So tell us, what do you guys love? What's some of your favorite bands, your
inspiration?
That's
so fucking cool.
It was super cool. So, you know, so we went out and purchased all the catalogs of these artists. So we had all of Weezer, all of Sade, all of Earth, Wind & Fire, all of like Culture Club. We had everything. It was so cool. So when Deftones came into the arena, they did their sound check. I was there for the whole time. I had my DJ set up in what was called the Ascot Room of the Quest. This is where they did their little VIP setup thing. And I'm in that room, mic checking, mixing and stuff, because I've been spinning in clubs for years. So I'm taking their music along with a beat that they wanted to hear, like Sade, and then amping it up and Earth, Wind, and Fire, and put my own spin on it.
So they're like, telling you, or no, they're hearing it.
They're just hearing it. They're doing their warm up and I'm playing loud, but they're doing their thing too. So once they're done, they go to chill, they get some food, they relax, they go to change clothes, but then they come working back through the room.
Meanwhile, you've been working the whole time. You've been working the room the whole time.
Whole time. And now we got,
let's not get it twisted. I just to give everybody a little bit of background, everybody who might listen to this podcast, a little bit of background. You've been doing club DJing for How long to that point?
A long time. Probably, Jesus, man. I started in the early 90s spinning in clubs. I worked in every club downtown Minneapolis that you can think of. Every hip-hop club, every house, Chicago house, industrial nights.
So you weren't fucking around either. You weren't fucking around. You were doing, because I know you as well as I think a lot of people do. Mm. You are meticulous and extremely prepared. You are maybe the most prepared person. And when shit is not prepared, you tighten up shit. So
yeah, put it together and kind of figured out how I wanted to speed curve it, build the room up, get them all bopping and moving a little bit. And then hopefully the band would hear what I'm doing, think this is cool, and mosey in. And that's exactly what those cats did. So it was so cool to see the band trickle into the room, and you're seeing Abe and you're seeing Steph and you're seeing, there's Chino. Now Chi comes into the room. You know, you can't miss Chi with them fucking dreads down to his feet, man. It was crazy. And so they all come over to the table in the booth where I'm kicking it, and Chino's just he's going through all my CDs and just smiling ear to ear.
Word.
He started signing stuff so we could give it to the winner, you know, like, yo, you know, you won this stuff and you get to meet him, here's your meet and greet and stuff. And then he gets behind me while I'm spinning and just grooved while I was spinning, so that was fun. And then I got on the microphone and did a little introduction to the crowd in the room. And then I handed the mic to him, and then he just spit for a while and talked to everybody, and it was really, really cool. And
did he rap?
Super cordial.
Did he rap at all?
No, man. That would have been cool as hell, but no.
I wonder at all, because I saw recently on I think it was the dude from H2O's podcast. He was like, he used to battle rap in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I can
dude.
Totally picture that. Not, like, I'm not surprised. I'm
how great! Like, I don't want to go on my new metal high horse or whatever right now, but man, yeah. I do love me some Chino raps. So that's cool as hell. So that was 98, 99.
99. And no, it had to be right about 2000. Forgive me. It had to be right around 2000 when Pony dropped, because that's what they were promoting at the time. And is that poster you got in your office that I gave you?
The back to school one that you gave me, yeah.
I got that. I got all that stuff.
You got that then?
That night. I got that night. So you got a piece of that history hanging in your office right now.
Yeah, I do. I should have it hanging behind me here in my home office.
You should.
I might have to go to work and cap that.
The last part of that story was cool is that, you know, I got invited back to have a cocktail with those guys before they went on stage. They were just kind of, you know, loosening up. They weren't getting hammered or anything. That was the after party. But I went back and I hit it up with Chi. And he's such a cool dude and very cordial and very welcoming to, you know, like, here's what we do on tour and here's how I pregame and all that. And he took this bottle out, and I tried to look for this. He took a bottle out that looked like something from the late 1800s, the early 1900s. It was clear, and it was something, it was like Bengay. Okay. And he popped a cork off the top of it and he poured it into his hand. And I'm like, oh my God. And it just burned my eyes. And he started rubbing it into his hands. And then after that, he flipped his hair over these long ass dreads and he started rubbing it into the back of his neck. And he's just rubbing it in. I'm like, now my eyes are watering. Like, dude, this hurts. What is this stuff? And he's like, brother, if I didn't put this on my neck every night before I go on stage, I would be in the hospital. I'm telling you, dude, it would be insane. If you got to whip this amount of hair around every damn night, you need this shit too. And it ended up being something like, you know, Biofreeze or Bengay, you know, something he needed to loosen up the muscles on his neck. And I just thought it was insane. And that smell sticks in my nose to this day. No, and I think about that moment and then watching him get on stage and whip that head around. It was insane. So, yeah, it was really cool.
During that Metallica week, that reminds me of when you had James Hetfield like in the broadcast at that pop-up shop or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was, which is Deftones performed that Tuesday. That was that show. That was maybe the best week of radio ever, which actually I wanted to ask you that if that's the best. It is the best week of radio ever. What an insane week, right? I mean, just comment or give everybody some context. It was Metallica debuted, like surprise debuted. Hardwired while you were there at HQ. They literally flew you to San Francisco to Metallica HQ, and then you came back. Deftones were there that Tuesday, and then that following Friday or Saturday, Metallica opened US Bank Stadium. Insane.
No, you got that wrong.
Oh,
but you're close. You're very close. The Deftones part is probably the real, but the Metallica thing, I'm it's Tuesday. I'm live on the radio doing afternoons, and Derek comes in and goes, yo, we're going to fly you out to to San Fran to be at Metallica's HQ to broadcast live. These dudes want to hype up this big show, so you got to fly out. And then they're doing a pop-up store, so you're going to broadcast live the following day like that. So it was like boom, boom, boom.
Oh,
I had no time to prepare. It was like, it flew by so damn fast. So maybe I'm screwing up the date as far as he may have told me that the week before. Then that Tuesday, Deftones played. Then that Wednesday night, I flew out to San Fran, wow, broadcast live in Metallica's HQ, their headquarters, first DJ in the world to ever broadcast live at Metallica's HQ. And they surprised attack, hit me with Hardwired and Self-Destruct, the new song. And I got a great story about that. It's quick, but here we are trying to talk about Deftones, one of our favorite bands, of course, but Metallica is right there towards the top, regardless of how many times we played that band on our radio station. That band's in my blood. That band is part of my DNA and always will be. It's just before I got on the radio, I mean, my God, that's the top of the mountain. And here I am in their house. And I've been around Lars before. Lars is a very unique dude. I've been around all those guys before. They're unique guys, you know? I got multiple stories over the years. And this time, Lars was very welcoming. Metallica had been out of the limelight for a minute, you know? So it wasn't like, you know, blast Metallica, like it kind of seems it's been over the last few years since they released that record. They've been in the spotlight again. But he was more laid back, and he didn't let on at all that they'd been working on new music. He just merely said, we've been working on some stuff. We got some, you know, scratch tracks laid down. Do you want to hear something? I'm like, cool. I totally would. I'm being honest with you. 1,000%. I thought fucking Lars was punking me. I thought he was just going to play me some stupid cover, some silly us messing around. And here it is, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. So my face was trying to keep it cool. Like, oh, number one, I was told, do not ask about new music. Don't go there. Don't go there.
Don't be that douchey DJ.
Yeah, you can't be that guy.
That guy, you know, sucks. So I'm that guy. I've been that guy plenty of times.
So here I am, you know, trying to follow the goddamn rules and do all that stuff and try to keep my poker face on. Like, this is cool, man. Cool. This is just some scratch track. It's just some rehearsal tape you're playing for me right now. And it turns out to be Hardwired to Self-Destruct. So my game face was on. And Lars, at the end of the song, he's like, did you like it? I couldn't tell. I'm like, yeah, dude, but I was told, yeah. You know what I mean? So I stuck to the rules, and I often do that. I'll stick to the rules, like you said about me being meticulous and DJing in clubs. I just stick to the rules, you know? And yeah, you can have fun. You can skate outside the lines as much as you want, but when you're dealing with Metallica,
yeah,
that was different that. Animal. So anyways, that wasn't
crazy. I was listening to that. Right. I was listening to that day. I remember distinctly listening, like, I, as you tell that story, I can remember listening and being like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember being like, I think I even remember you going,
yeah,
because he played it off a little thing, didn't he? You told me he played it off like a little device or something,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Like, he just put it into your microphone. That he plugged in, you know, they've got Metallica headquarters. Is
they're
insane.
Ready.
It's just, yeah. You know, it's insane. It looks like a garage because that's what they want it to look like. But it's also multi-million dollar steel setup that's just insanely wired perfectly and sounds great and all that stuff. So, yeah. Playing it off this little zip drive again, I just thought he was punking me. So I rolled with the punk and I'm not going to play it. You know, I'm not going to, you know, call Lars out like, ah, ha, ha, dude, you're, you know, whatever. I let it roll, you know? So yeah, I think they were a little surprised by my reaction, and it was a crazy week. And then to fly home and get on my flight, and I see Kirk Hammett, he's sitting in front, like the first class, right when I come in, he gives me nucks as I roll by him. We're on the same flight flying home, and get home and then go to sleep.
You didn't buy him a drink on the flight? You didn't buy him a drink on the flight?
Yeah. Totally. But the night before, dude, I just tied it on with the Metallica peeps too. Like, you know, their management stuff. I had like 3 bottles of wine. It was just, it was go time. So I probably wasn't in the best shape to go and interview Metallica the next day, but I made the best of it. It was fun enough. And then the next day, obviously getting home and then broadcasting live from the pop-up store, and the whole band came in. Yeah. You were there. It was insane. Yeah. So you're right. That was,
and that's what made me think of it, was because you so quickly, when Hetfield left, one of the first things I said to you was, did you see the size of his neck? It was huge. And you were like, without skipping a beat, you were like, bro, he's been banging his head for 30 years. And I was like, yo, that's what's up. And that's what made me think of that when you were talking about Chi, like putting the Ben Gayer on his neck or whatever. Like, Hetfield's neck is no joke. It's like a semi-truck tire. It's huge.
I've used it on the radio, man. It's seriously like his neck is the size of our thighs. It's insane. So he's a big dude. But
did you go to the Deftones show that week? Did you go to that show at Myth?
I did not.
Dude, so when is the last one that you've been to?
It's been a minute. It's been, embarrassingly so, it's been a minute.
It's August at the Armory. That would have been this.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, a
couple of weeks ago.
I was looking forward to that. That was really the next one on my schedule. Like, dude, I can't wait.
Oh, man.
I've caught Chino since then. I mean, you introduced me to Cross's, you know, a Chino side project, and I fell in love. I mean, that also is part of my DNA now. I don't go far from not listening to that as well. I know that inside and out. I've introduced that to so many more people. So thank you for you playing that for me. So I traveled to Coachella to see Chino and Cross's, and I went to the show just to see them.
That's right. I forgot that you did that. That was sick, though, right? Because you
super
you
got cool.
You partied with like Shaun White and Carmen Electra, right?
Yeah. Yep. That is true. It's crazy, man. You know, and then the dudes from Hollywood Undead were there, and Of Mice and Men. It was a crazy weekend. But yeah, so we all go to this to Coachella, and you get split up, and it's a unique festival. It's not. It's cool to see. I would say that it's cool to see such an eclectic, you know, mix of music and. And Crosses was playing in like an Air Force hangar, and it's just, you know, it's crazy how they set this stuff up so it looks like a club in LA or New York or Vegas or something, and it's just all the lights and it's, you know, the zip lines and the stage and the big screens and stuff. And I got really close, and I was able to get really close and enjoy the set from Crosses and see Chino rock out and just own the crowd. You know, his Deftone skills shine through with anything he does, of course. So it was pretty rad. It was a great moment. I'm glad I went all the way there and dealt with all the BS of Coachella just to see that set. It was cool.
Deftones never played Coachella before. Isn't that crazy?
No, really?
Deftones have never played Coachella.
Yeah.
It kind of blows my mind.
Something doesn't surprise me about that.
But
it still
blows
my mind. Yeah, I mean,
it's
all Beyonce and you know, Outkast and stuff playing.
Well, Rage Against the Machine. Rage Against the Machine would have been playing this year.
True.
That would have been, but it's sort of different. It's unique. The sentimental, or not the sentimental, but the.
Oh yeah. Kind of like the getting the band back together vibe,
that sort of thing.
A throwback thing, you know, and like, wow, once Rage is on stage, like it almost becomes a movement that has never ended, you know, when you get Rage on the stage again, you know, that's true. So. But yeah, man, I've been fortunate enough to be around those guys many a time over the years. They've always been cool. They've been cordial. They come to the radio station. I know you did a thing with Chino a handful of years ago. What was that, 4 or 5 years ago he came to the Radio Ranch? Well, and you
that
did?
Was Metallica Week. That was Metallica Week.
That was that week?
Yeah, that was why Metallica Week was so incredible, was that Tuesday for me was that Deftones Day.
Wow.
That was Deftones Day during Metallica Week. And then it was great because they came back not long after and played. Open for Guns N' Roses at US Bank. I mean, it was a short set, but it was cool.
Right. That's it, dude. That's the last time I saw him.
Oh, you were at Guns. You were at Guns.
Yep. That was it. That was the last time I saw him right there. As you said, it was like, oh, that's it.
It was a cool little 10 song set. It was good.
And you were close, man. You and your mom's.
I got hella close. Yeah. Yeah. Mom needed to get out the house. It was funny watching my mom climb the stairs of the US Bank Stadium. That was a scene, man.
Right.
So
she get loose with Deftones.
I think she was like just happy that I was happy. You know what I mean? But she really enjoyed Guns N' Roses. You know, there's that timeless quality of Guns N' Roses. I think I've asked you this before. Digging into the Deftones Minneapolis history a little bit. You did not see them in the Metallica or in the McDonald's parking lot in '96, right? That Dinky Town McDonald's.
No.
They played that Dinky Town McDonald's parking lot that's like right around the corner from where we were. You did not.
Yeah, that was legendary at the radio station. So that kind of carried through right when I started working there. So they already had that kind of.
Was that a radio thing?
To them. Yeah. Yep. Same with Limp Bizkit. I think they did a thing at like a Burger King or something, dude, that for us too back in the day. Like I have still have that shirt. It's got the Burger
King. I've seen
King
that
burger.
Shirt. Yeah, with the Limp Bizkit.
Yep. I still have that. Like have it our way or something like
legendary.
That or whatever it said.
That's cool as shit, dude. Good
classic for sure.
Wow. I wonder if there's like a Deftones with like the golden arches or something floating around somewhere.
That'd be sweet to have.
I wondered if that was a radio event because it seemed like it had to be a promotional event to do it in a McDonald's parking lot. And they beat the hell out of Minneapolis for like during 2006. They did like 96. They did like 4 different, at least 4, maybe
maybe one of these is redundant, but they were at Target Center with Zombie and Pantera. They were at Target Center with Korn, and then they did that Dinky Town McDonald's parking lot. Like,
crazy.
I try to imagine that, and that just...
And those bands of that era were all doing that. Like I said, they put in the work. Korn did the same thing. I mean, I remember seeing Korn play First Avenue, and then me and Jonathan Davis bellying up to the bar and just having some beers afterwards, you know? And you'd be in a room like 7th Street Entry, and some of these bands would come through and play, and you'd be hanging out with them for the rest of the night because you worked at the Radio Ranch. And like I said, in the beginning of this whole thing, they just, you know, like, I guess some of these guys are pretty damn genuine and they give a shit if radio cares. And we did, and we do. So that I was thankful for that made this for a comfortable meet and greet out the gate. And then sometimes long lifelong friends with these guys, you know.
Do you remember the first Deftones song you played on the radio?
Yeah, it was probably Be Quiet and Drive or something like that.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, I guess you were probably pushing records before Pony then. Yeah. Right.
Oh yeah.
You started
for sure,
in 96, 97. Yeah, yeah, you were playing.
Oh yeah. They, without a doubt, I was already hitting the, you know, the old school stuff from, Around the Fur was hit quite a bit. We played a lot of the records that we see, My Own Summer, of course, and then Be Quiet and Drive. And then, let me see what else after that. I think there was another song after that that we were fortunate enough to play. You get a little success with a couple of songs, and then they get a third song. And then,
yeah,
right, a little bit of leeway, and they're playing something else. But it was cool to see, you know, Deftones then with Pony hook up with, you know, Maynard, James Keenan on Passenger, and just take my breath away. Because at that time, you talk about your obsession with Deftones. I have always had this obsession with Maynard and Tool, and so for my favorite vocalist to be teaming up with another one of my favorite vocalists was pretty rad.
I've read
and that song's breathtaking.
I've read it's so cool being in 2020 and with this band that, to be honest with you, I didn't think I would be listening to, like, in 20. If you'd have told me 20 years ago, like, this is still going to be your favorite band and they're still going to make amazing music that you're going to love and anticipate, I would have been like, okay, we'll see. Because to me, they, like, while they enjoyed some commercial success, they were still always like the third or fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh band that got mentioned even in amongst their peers.
Yep.
And always sort of this like, oh, and those are the artsy kids. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, they do have that vibe to them.
Disparaging way. And it's in an almost disparaging way that has become like an uplifting way. Like, now it's like, oh, these are art rockers, Deftones. You know what I mean?
Well, these dudes have stood the test of time now, man, you know, and I think some of the bands from that era that have disappeared, Cold Chambers and whatever, you know, these dudes stood out because of their talent, their songwriting ability, their work ethic, all that stuff. Their onstage performance, as you know, is breathtaking. And, you know, that transcends. And that gives them a 20-year career sometimes, because people are just going to come back and come back. You're not going to want to miss a Deftones show because they're that amazing. And then you want the next generation, your kids, your niece or nephews, to go see this stuff, to take it in and maybe feel something that you felt 20 years ago, you know?
No doubt. I wonder what it is you think that makes Change a successful radio song.
Probably just the context and the style in which the song was done. I mean, it was very user friendly. It is for a Deftones song, very verse, chorus, verse kind of vibe, rinse, repeat. But the artsiness, the heaviness, and the guitar tone that hits you and stay in those vocals, it's got to stay quality to it. You know, it's got all those user friendly things that radio songs, radio hits have. And yet it's artsy enough, as we mentioned, and unique enough that it sticks with you. So you hear it one day and you're singing it the next day. And that's what makes a really successful single sometimes, is that stayability in your brain. And that's what that song has for me.
So when you're scheduling, like when you're creating a music playlist and when you're putting together what you're going to play, how do you use that song? What does that song do?
Yeah, it's a good question. A song like that is, you know, you've been to many a parties over the year, years of your life, I'm sure. And sometimes at the party, that DJ puts on the one song and the whole place goes boom, right?
Right.
That song is a little bit mellow, but it still has the quality of like when you put it on, everyone at the party's like, right the F on, man. Cool. They all feel that. So you schedule that song like that. If you were to constantly hit that track, it would almost become maybe a little vanilla, but because it's not hit all the time, it's tasty. So it's like it's a perfect left turn. It's a perfect way to get a party to jump off and remind them, hey man, something's about to come. Something really cool is on the way. I think that's how I think of that song as I schedule it. And then, believe it or not, because it's become such a massive hit, is their staple hit for radio that now it's comfortable food. When you eat it, it's like, ah, Deftones, that's my jam. I love that song. You know what I mean? It's comfortable food. Anyone goes back to that slice of pizza and goes, I love this. You know, that's what it is.
Pepperoni. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Except for not pepperoni. It's probably like your like the sausage that you like, the rare sausage.
But
what about, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but those cats also are a little bit of pineapple on that pizza too. You know what I'm saying?
That's
what
it is.
They're always going to give you a little bit of something. And that's what's cool about Deftones. You're not just going to get that. They're going to be something extra, something unique, and something that you weren't expecting.
God, I love pineapple on pizza as well.
Truly.
Pineapple and pepperoni, if I'm being honest. So what about when you're working a club, like when you're at a bar or a club, what are the Deftones songs that you utilize?
Back to School, Mini Maggot, I suppose. Stuff that's a little bit more upbeat. Swerve City would be another one.
Butcher, I would imagine.
Butcher, for sure. That's probably been my number one go-to. And I'll be honest with you. I love that song for... this is what I see. This is what I see when I hear this. That song is sex. It's sexy. It's a sexy song. It's hot. It's steamy, you know?
The kids would say, this song fucks. That's what the kids would say. This song fucks. That's what they would say.
Teach me something new, but I like that. I like that. Yeah, dude. So that song's rad. I mean, there's so many more. I mean, I used to play, let me see, stuff about Pony, of course. I used to, you know, early in the night, I used to bang out like Passenger and stuff just so people could hear the Maynard part, you know, roll those windows down. This cool night air is curious. I love that. And most of the stuff on Diamond Eyes, like Rocket Skates and stuff too, is still cool as hell for me. Like, I'll always go back to cool jams like that too. So yeah, man.
Like, those are your three, like,
no,
as far as...
I'd go old school too, dude. And it's got to be, I'm going to hit you with, you know, Shove It. You know, I'm going back with My Own Summer. I'm always going to hit people with that song. And Be Quiet and Dry was always kind of a B-team, kind of a left turn song. If you had the right amount of people in the room that were going to just get down with a cool rocking tune, and it was early in the night, you could play that one. Thank you. More wine coming my way.
Yeah. You know what I almost brought out? I bought a bottle of the Snoop wine.
Yeah.
It's just like a table red wine. I almost brought it out, but I decided I was going to drink a Deftones beer for the first Deftones podcast.
So. Go ahead. So, yeah, dude. So I'm still playing. I would still play that old school stuff just because, you know, my love for what got me into the band, you know? And I love the remixes and stuff they would do. I would love their covers, you know, when they covered Sade and you know, Ordinary Love. And I think that really, really opened my brain to how massive this band and how talented this band's, you know, their ceiling is insane. You know, they could do so much. And Chino's voice, his range is unique. It's just crazy unique. And, you know, so that's always brought me back, is that they could pull off the covers. They can pull off these originals. They can do the softer stuff. They can do the radio hits. They can do the heavy. They can knock you over, you know, and that's a good band, man. You know, that's what's interesting about them.
I appreciate you again coming to be. I thought, you know, when I'm doing a Deftones podcast, who's going to be more fun to bring on than my friends? So it's really cool that you came to do this.
And thanks for having me.
In the spirit of Chino recently said the reason that he only tweets links to songs on YouTube is because he thinks that there's nothing more valuable or nothing more exciting to get from your favorite artist or from an artist than what they enjoy. So I would like you to give me three recommendations. It can be anything. It can be music, movies, books, TV shows, an artist, a writer, a photographer, old, new, anything that you want to recommend. Three recommendations.
Yeah. So that's great. I have a book that I just purchased. Let me grab it here. I just got my hands on, I just ordered this last week. Total Effing Godhead, the biography of Chris Cornell. And this is insane, dude. It's really cool to see the beginning of Chris Cornell with Soundgarden. And then the evolution with Audio Slave, and it's great, you know. So I would suggest this book. It's the biography of Chris Cornell called Total Effing Godhead by Corbin Reeve. So that would be one of my suggestions. Beautiful. I know you're a fan of Chris Cornell as well. So
big time. Beautiful.
I think a show that I'm really geeking on and have for a while now. I'm not a huge MMA guy. I appreciate it. There's such a skill that's involved and such a it is by far a crazy marathon to see these dudes get in the cage and fight for these 3 rounds to 5 rounds to do what they do. But there's a streaming a series on Netflix called Kingdom that I ended up really enjoying. It wasn't just for the MMA aspect of it. It was for a couple of the actors on the show. And forgive me, off the top of my head, I don't know their names, but the show is called Kingdom and it's on Netflix and they did 3 series. It was originally supposed to be on DirecTV and I believe Netflix purchased it, put it on, and they're hoping that if it blows up, they're going to do more series. And it's fantastic. The some of the actors are so real and legit. So I would strongly suggest checking out Kingdom on Netflix because of the storyline, for the acting and the realness that I think a lot of people relate to. So those are 2 things that I really enjoy. Let me see here. There's an artist that I constantly go back to and I spend time with his paintings because they move me. They remind me of being in the club back in the day and, you know, pretty women and the booze and the back when people could smoke cigs in the bar and all that. And his name is Fabian Perez. And Fabian Perez has art that is sexy and it's a little bit of dirty and a little bit of nightlife. And it kind of flips the switch when I look at it and remind me of those old days. So those are a few things that I could think of off the top of my head.
Amazing. Thank you very much, dude. I really appreciate it.
You got it. All right, brother.
Well, this was the very first conversation that I recorded in making this podcast, and lesson learned, I definitely should have left the mic running because Pablo went on to tell me how he was actually jumped into Slipknot. I'm not going to steal his thunder, but he really needs to have his own podcast. He's a great storyteller with a bunch of great stories, but lesson learned, I will keep the mic rolling after the conversation ends, see if we can get maybe some bonus content in future podcasts. Next week, I will speak with Brendan Garone from Incendiary, one of my favorite bands of the past about 3 years or so. I'm going to speak with Derek Madden, my boss, the program director at 93X, very soon. I had a really fun conversation with Vezanik, the founder of Deftones Live. We spoke for almost 3 hours, I think. I don't know if all of that's going to fit into the podcast, but it was a really great chat, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So please like and subscribe, or if you want to reach out to me about the podcast, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Woodbruh, WOODBRUH. I think my DMs are open. Is that how people do it? I don't know. This is all relatively new to me, too. Thank you for listening to Deftones, and thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods.